This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your smartphone, tablet, or desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me once again, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing, who's currently flipping through an issue of Star Trek Communicator. Matthew, what year is this?
Chris, I believe this is the year, let me look at the magazine. 1999?
Wow.
Yeah, Deep Space Nine, Chris, did you know that it's actually ending? So, I don't know, but I mean, who lives and who dies? I'm not sure. Don't tell me if you've already seen it. I taped it on my VHS, and I haven't got a chance to watch it yet. So don't let me know who you know makes it.
Okay, yeah, I won't spoil it for you.
Okay,
spoiler alert, right there. I will not spoil it for you. No, we've pulled out our old Star Trek Communicator magazines, actually holding paper in our hands today in preparation for this show, because we're going to do a character episode, and it's a character that we sadly didn't get to know very well, Kai Opaka.
Yeah, Chris, it really was sad that this was a character that we didn't get to know better. In fact, what's so interesting is she plays a pretty large role in the very first episode of Emissary. She is pretty integral to the story and really being the impetus, I think, for what we'll see as Benjamin Sisko makes his first spiritual journey with the prophets.
Absolutely, yeah. And one thing we'll talk about a bit later, I don't want to get too far into it here right up front, but I sometimes try to imagine Emissary and Sisko going down to the planet and that meeting that he has with Kai Opaka, which really sets into motion his journey through the entire series. And it's also our first glimpse at that aspect of Bajoran culture, really, you know, the spiritual leader and the orbs and how all of that plays into their society. And I try to picture someone else like Burrell or Wynn being the person that he met instead of Opaka. And how that would have worked and what the tone of the show would have been if it had been that from the outset. And I really think that the way that Camille Saviola played Kai Opaka and the presence that she had as the religious leader was really important for setting the show up properly.
I think when she comes on screen, she immediately has a spiritual presence. Like, you immediately feel like she is connected to something else on screen, and that she is in a different level, a different plane than our Star Trek characters we normally know. She, I think, it just embodies exactly what you'd kind of want in a spiritual leader for people. I mean, in this article, she talks about that she's considered, you know, kind of basically the Pope of the Bajoran religion. And, the effect that she has as this leader, the respect she has of all of her people, and the way that she's able to garner the trust of somebody like Sisko, this kind of very cynical, very hardened, sad man, and kind of open him up, I think is really interesting. And I really like the character from the very beginning. I think she's very interesting, and I want to know more about her. I want to know more about her past, and I want to see more of her kind of interaction with Sisko, you know, watching Emissary, I'm immediately hooked thinking, okay, here's going to be somebody as we dive into this new character with Sisko and with Kyo Paka. They're probably going to have a lot of interaction because this guy's going to have a ton of questions because basically he's a non-believer and she's the Pope, and who better to ask these questions of and have to be a spiritual guide.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the first topics to really talk about is how she became the Kai in the first place. And Opaka was born and grew up under the occupation, which of course is the case for so many of the characters and probably the majority of the characters that we know on Bajor, because the occupation ran for half a century. But she grew up under that, and she became more and more influential. Eventually, she became the Kai. And I think about, especially with the religious leaders that we see later on in Deep Space Nine, what is that quality about Opaka that would lead the Bajorans to respect and follow her? And this issue of communicator that we're looking at here in the interview with Saviola, it's subtitled Kyo Paka Gentleness Mist. And you already mentioned that she is seen kind of like the Pope of the Bajoran religion. And her mission is really to bring peace to the people. When you look at the little bit that we get to see of Opaka, which is of course not a lot, I mean, what are the qualities? And I think you probably more than anybody that we have here on the network is qualified to speak about this. What are the qualities that you see in her that make her that strong and I think stabilizing religious leader for the Bajorans?
I think one of the things, Chris, is that she's somebody who doesn't seem to have sought out this power. And I think that that is definitely something that we see throughout Deep Space Nine, that many, many people who are main characters in the show are seeking out and desiring to be in power of some kind, whether it be politically, whether it be spiritually, or whether it be both, monetarily with the Ferengi. I mean, we see all of these power grabs, and yet I think one of the things you immediately get from Kyo Paka is that she has been bestowed this gift of power by people who respect her because it's not what she's sought. Mm-hmm. It's become her life's work because she's already been somebody who's been pouring her life into the spiritual betterment of her people and the betterment of the Bajoran people in general. I think those two things together is that she wants people to be holistically taken care of. She sees people not just in a spiritual sense, but she also sees their needs physically and mentally and emotionally. And I think that these are the things that the best spiritual leaders look at, is people as a whole. And when I see Kyo Paka and just the way that she's played in this episode and then the subsequent episode that she's in Battle Lines, you can really see this play out very quickly. And it really does set her apart, I think, especially from the other people who desire to be Kai, except for maybe Barile, who kind of walks in her footsteps as the same kind of person. And yet I don't think that he really has her charisma.
Right. That's the thing, right? Like, yeah. And some people may be listening and thinking, wow, you're reading like an incredible amount into this. But I don't really think so, because the thing about it is that, like, everything that you describe about her, I also feel that about this character who we didn't get to see very much, because there's just something in her presence and then like charisma that you mentioned there. There's something that she exudes that gives you that feeling, like everything you described, all wrapped up into these few moments where we see her on screen and she's interacting with Sisko or interacting with Kira.
Well, and she's, you know, she's taking Sisko at his most vulnerable time and kind of pushing him in directions that he's never been before. You know, I don't think that Sisko realizes that he's been hurt so badly, so emotionally and so spiritually, because he doesn't really kind of believe in a spiritual aspect of himself. And yet he really is suffering in this way. And so she kind of pushes him in that. And it's lovingly, but, you know, she just confronts him, you know, face value. Mm-hmm. Look, this is who I am. This is what I believe. This is who I believe you to be. I believe that, you know, these things, the prophets that you don't believe in, have called you to be this. And you know, she does this great job of really lovingly calling him out in lots mm-hmm. of different ways. But where I'm getting all of it from is just the way that she takes care of Cisco mm-hmm. as a character, because that's really mm-hmm. the main interaction that we see. Yeah. And you can tell, I think, that this is no different than the way that she treats anyone, because especially as once you get again to battle lines, you really see these things playing out for people that she doesn't even know. She just mm-hmm. felt called by the prophets to go there. So
right.
this is just the type of person that she is. And I think the thing that if you are somebody of belief, this is what you hope that your religious leader looks like, is somebody who wants to take care of the whole person. You know, and I think that that's what we see from the best of the world's religions, are the ones that take care of people wholly, not just in one aspect or the other.
Mm-hmm. And it comes down to individuals, though.
Yeah, because I mean, in dealing with people and meeting people where they are, exactly.
It's not any, you know, single religion. I mean, any religion, you have good aspects of that and bad aspects of that. And so what I see in Kaiopaka, because we're talking about the Bajoran religion, and then we see people within the Bajoran religion who don't exhibit the qualities that you get from her, which is what makes her so interesting to me when I think about the whole series, because as we'll also talk about shortly, how could the entire series and even the course of the Bajoran people have been different if she hadn't died? And I'm doing air quotes because I know she lives on, but essentially died in battle lines. One of the few things that we know about her past, and as we talk about her kindness and gentleness and a concern for people, is the fact that she did collaborate with the Cardassians during the occupation, in the final decade of the occupation, where she gave information to the Cardassians to let them know the location of a Bajoran resistance cell that was hiding in the Kendra Valley. And that actually, of course, she did in the resistance cell. It also cost the life of her son. So she sacrificed her son for this, but she also saved the lives of 1,200 Bajorans at the same time. What do you make of this move, and especially in terms of her as being the leader of her people, the spiritual leader of her people?
I think it just references, you know, kind of clearly any biblical type motif, savior-like motif that we get. I mean, obviously, that's the whole story of the Bible, of that God will send his son so that one person can mm-hmm. suffer and die so that everybody might live. And so Kaiopaka makes this decision, you know, do I sacrifice my son and in the lives of this resistance cell, probably, you know, maybe a few dozen people at most, because we know they kept them small, and let, you know, 1,200 people die? Or mm-hmm. do I sacrifice my son so that the 1,200 people can live? And she mm-hmm. makes that very tough decision. And so, again, kind of placing her in this very spiritual motif from the beginning of her life, you know, mm-hmm. and gosh, do you really call that collaboration if you're saving the lives of
Bajorans? I think it depends on which side you're on, how you're looking at it, because it's from the outside looking in, it could be seen as that. I mean, you are turning in your own people to those who are occupying mm-hmm. you. Now, this story, this never came out. We know this from the collaborator, and it's something that was never revealed to the people. And in fact, Vedic Burrell protected this to make sure it didn't come out. What do you think, pure speculation, of course, what do you think the Bajoran people would have thought about her if they had actually learned that this happened?
Man, that's a tough call because I'm reminded, you know, pretty much of the Obi-Wan Kenobi axiom that that things are true from a certain point of view. And mm-hmm. so I think some people would have thought that she was a hero. And I think on the other side, some people would have thought that she's a villain. Mm-hmm. Now, with her story, though, I think that she has a special... It's a little bit different of a circumstance because she was willing, again, to sacrifice her own son. She willingly knows what she's doing. It's not that she's collaborating with Cardassians to get better rations or right. a nicer bed or any of those kind of things. But she's doing it for the lives of, you know, 1,200 other Bajorans. Mm-hmm. And the fact mm-hmm. that she's giving up so much, I think even if it came out, people may actually revere her more. Who knows? I think that's the danger of keeping a secret like this, because then it does seem like she has something to hide. Whereas yeah. I think this is more something that, not that she needs to tout, is like, look what I did, but it's more of, this is what I did for the benefit of all people, and I was willing to give up my son to make sure that these Bajorans lived. And mm-hmm. call that collaboration, or just call that an act of mercy and grace. Mm-hmm. I think of it as mercy and grace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how you define it, I think, really does depend on from what position you're viewing it, right? Like you just said, you know, things
well,
are true
and,
from
I mean,
a certain
just think of those families. Yeah. How would they have looked at it? You know, 1,200 yeah. Bajorans, and they have families now, you know, say mm-hmm. this comes out later. Mm-hmm. especially in the episode The Collaborator. I think that those families, obviously, more than ecstatic that she did what she did.
Definitely, those families, yeah. Well, let's talk about... We already touched on this a little bit. I suggested how the show might have been different if the initial setup and emissary had not been with Opaka, but had been with someone else. So... imagine that we see emissary, Sisko arrives there, he goes down, he has his first orb experience, he's introduced to the Bajoran religion and the prophets, and it's what's really important in that episode is, I think, it's not even so much the religious aspect of it, really, it's the fact that Sisko gets to finally face what's pent up inside him. And when he faces that, one thing that's important is the gentle hand of Opaka, which you talked about earlier, in helping him see that. So imagine we didn't have Opaka. Imagine we had Kai Wynn from the very beginning. How do you think the setup of the series would have been?
Oh, gosh. I think it would have been even more adversarial for a much longer period of time between the emissary and the Bajoran religion. I think that it's obviously her influence that allows him to begin to accept himself as a part of this religious world in a way that he never would have before because of the way that she kind of shepherds him.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, just think of it, if it had been Wynn... I mean, she's not even happy. She even had the whole conversation, she said, with Kai Opaka. Why did the prophets make this outsider, you know, our emissary?
Mm-hmm.
And so Opaka told her that one should never look into the eyes of one's own gods. My goodness, what a really beautiful way of putting. Do you question your creators? Do you question the ones mm-hmm. you consider gods? Are you them? And might they not have a reason that you don't understand, which I think, again, plays beautifully out in the story
mm-hmm.
of Deep Space Nine and who Benjamin Sisko is and why he's there. So, man, I think of her being that person that he encounters. And I just think it creates an entirely different story, especially when you consider that he's there to kind of help Bajor come into the Federation, and it's going to be much harder for him to do if he's immediately kind of hit with this wall of resentment and hatred of Wynn. Whereas he is, I think, able to deal with her later on down the road because he's already had the acceptance of other Bajorans, starting with his very first meeting with Opaka.
What if it had been Vedic Burrell? Do you think he would have just tried to get Sisko to set him up with Kira?
I think he may have just put Sisko to sleep, you know, just with his boring kind of droll nature. I think that's probably what would have happened. Sisko would have nodded off. But
Because like you said earlier, he maybe spiritually is kind of in line with Opaka, but definitely lacked the charisma that she had.
Yeah, he lacks that spark that Opaka has, that really, you know, she knew just how to kind of question and prod and push, but all in just kind of loving way, and just her demeanor and everything created an open space for Sisko to be able to figure this out. Again, I think it's just a really well done writing for the creators of Deep Space Nine, and it kind of makes me wonder which of them may have had, if any of them, a good experience with a religious leader who had helped them take some things from their past and leave them in their past and kind of move forward into a new direction in life. Because it really does seem like somebody has kind of had this experience to be able to really write this out for Sisko.
I think the whole premise of the series for me, Sisko's journey, it depends upon this type of person, Kaiopaka, at the beginning. I cannot picture it being set up. Certainly not with Wynn, and not with Burrell either. I think what you said about it being adversarial would definitely be the case with Wynn, at least. Let's talk about one of the other key moments for Opaka that we know something about, which is the fact that she dies in battle lines. So although she lives on, for all intents and purposes, she dies there because she cannot leave this planet anymore. She's on this war-torn world in the Gamma Quadrant, and these microbes there are keeping her alive because this is the episode Battle Lines, and so these people keep killing each other, but something regenerates them. And so she also is being regenerated at that point. So she's going to live on, but she has to be there. And she says that her calling is now to help the Ennis and the non-Ennis find peace. And I have two questions here. The first one is, why do you think she feels that that's her mission, to help these aliens that she's never met, when prior to the crash on that planet, her mission was to guide her people on Bajor?
You know, I think obviously it's something that she felt compelled by the prophets to do.
Does that suggest that the prophets are also overseeing aliens in the Gamma Quadrant?
Well, I mean, we do know from the book series that there are other planets in the Gamma Quadrant who did worship the prophets, and they had a slightly different relationship with the prophets, but they obviously believed in them and those kind of things. So, yeah, it is very interesting to me to think that, and this is where, when we got into that conversation about who the prophets are and whether they're, you know, all-knowing or all those kind of things, I think this is might be where I pulled out that they are a lot more sufficiently godlike than they are not godlike, because they obviously have some very big plans for people, like, say, somebody like Kaiopaka, involving a place that's quite far away in the Gamma Quadrant and in a whole other part of the galaxy. Their celestial temple binds those two quadrants together, but that's still a massive amount of space. And of course, I guess it really helps if you're outside of time and space, so that those two things really don't matter
it's
to
useful.
You.
Yeah.
So I think that she goes there because she is compelled by the prophets to do so. And that mission leads her to serve them in the same way that she's always served them. And the fact that she had been asked to serve the prophets by being Kai, and now she feels compelled and called to serve the prophets with the Ennis and the non-Ennis. To her, it's all service to the prophets. There's no distinction.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other question actually transitions us into the final point to talk about with her as well, which the scenes, I think that episode 2, Battle Lines, did a lot for Kira's character. And the scenes with Kira and Opaka when Opaka's dying are pretty powerful. And how does her death or removal from Bajor, again, because she's not actually dead, impact Kira and also impact the Bajorans?
I think the biggest impact is that Kira and the rest of the Bajorans begin to look at Sisko as the leader instead of
so you
looking
think if,
at Kai Opaka.
If Opaka had still been there, they would have been less likely to actually buy into the idea that Sisko is the emissary?
Not just to buy into him, because I think a lot of people do, but I think that he wouldn't have had the pull. I mean, because for a while, then you have that vacuum of leadership between who's going to be Kai. And I think people more and more begin to look at him. And then, of course, you get to the point where he tells Bajor not to join the Federation at that point because the prophets have told him. I mean, all of these things make him more important to the series and more the spiritual leader of Bajor, even if he doesn't want to be. So I think that that's probably one of the main reasons for taking him away from the show.
Interesting.
And it really helps build his character in a way that I think even at the beginning, you don't necessarily see coming, like this is going to be how this plays out. But it's funny, Chris, looking at this Star Trek communicator, there's a great article in here by Kevin Dillmore. And he talked to Ira Stephen Baer, and Ira Stephen Baer said this about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. He said, "I was certainly someone who said time and time again at the beginning that we were a darker, grittier Star Trek, but I also think we were the most human." Mm-hmm. And I really think that plays out in these stories, and especially with these spiritual stories with Kai Opaka and with Sisko, and exactly what they were trying to do with these characters. They were trying to drive at the heart of what makes people tick, even in the 24th century. And it really works. You know, it just, and I think that's what makes it speak to you now as much as it did then. And I think it will even continue to speak to us in the future.
Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting thing how the things we've talked about come together in a way that I hadn't really thought about before, that we agree that Kai Opaka is necessary for the setup in Emissary. We need that kind of leader. But as you just said, she then had to be removed from the show in order for Sisko's importance to rise up, that you need her to set him up, but the two of them couldn't really exist on the show together after that and get the same level of importance that we needed for Sisko.
Yeah. I mean, it's very much, again, I think akin to why Obi-Wan Kenobi and Yoda in the original Star Wars trilogy don't stay around. It's because once they kind of pass on what they need to Luke, they need Luke to pick up the mantle and run with it. Very much in the same way that Opaka, I think, is able to pass on what she needs to for Sisko, and then he is able to move forward and become the figurehead of everything, and which he obviously does, very much so by the end of the series.
Yeah. Well, then final point, just to wrap up here, beyond Opaka, well, with or without, so how do you think the series would have played out had Opaka remained Kai all the way through?
Oh, man.
Is it even possible to do the series as we know it with her there all the way through?
I mean, I think it's definitely possible. I think that it would have been very interesting to see more interaction between her and Sisko. I feel like the mentorship that she would have been able to give him would have been quite interesting to see. That kind of companionship that he didn't really get. You know, he didn't have anybody kind of really there to guide him in this process of getting to know the prophets. And I got the feeling like, you know, Opaka was somebody who had experienced not just an orb experience, but maybe even communication with the prophets outside of that. So she very much, I think, understood that. That's just my speculation. So I think it would have made a much more kind of, I think you put here in the notes, Chris, a spiritually pure world. I think issues like the circle wouldn't have happened very early in the show because I think she would have been a much more binding force.
Right.
So I think without her, you do again, you just kind of need her to leave the show because otherwise you kind of have a really big roadblock to where you're going to be taking Sisko. And two, just kind of some of the conflict that you were able to be able to explore with the Bajoran people because she was gone as well.
Yeah, I think you could certainly do a show with her there, but the Circle Trilogy is a great example because, yeah, I agree, those events probably wouldn't have happened. And those events are also what gave rise to Wynn as Kai and the corruption of the Bajoran religion that we see throughout the series that leads us to the end game. And even the fact that Dukat was able to come in and work with the Pa Wraiths and everything that we saw, the turmoil at the end, you know, that would not have happened with Kai Opaka there either. So you could do a series, but I think it would be just a completely different story all the way through if you had this gentle, respected, strong religious leader there all the way through.
Yeah, and I think the legacy that she left was huge, just in the characters. You know, especially when it comes to Kira, I think she had a huge influence on who Kira became and her connection with the prophets and Sisko as well. So those two characters alone, I think that they created a fascinating character who. I wish we would have at least seen maybe one or two more times. I thought that would have been something that would have been interesting to follow up with. But perfect beginning, like perfect character, perfect beginning for the series, I think, and for the spiritual journey of the most, arguably the most important character in the show, Sisko.
Right.
Or as they liked to call him, the prophets did, the Sisko.
The Sisko. He is the Sisko. He is. All right. Well, this was interesting to talk about Kai Opaka. And of course, you mentioned purely, this is my speculation a moment ago. I think this whole episode today is pretty much speculation because we don't have a lot to go on here. But I do think she was very important to the setup and is a character who a lot of people do like, and actually Saviola said that she went to a convention and there were three women who followed her around everywhere dressed as Kai Opaka, and she named them the Kai-ettes. So she's only there for a moment, but she is a loved character. All right. Well, Kai Opaka is not the only thing we've been talking about this week in the world of Star Trek. We talk about all sorts of stuff here on the network. So here's a quick look at some other things we've been discussing on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Everything that we do has to exist inside of this little box.
This window, if you will.
Right. And you can do whatever you want inside there, but once you step outside, you know, it's the real world.
Earl Grey.
That's, you know what I mean? And then Star Trek V is all about crapping all over the rest of the movies that just came out.
Axanar, the official podcast.
When you're in the edit bay, as soon as you put one image next to another, it's this instant gratification. It's this great creative jolt, which happens every time you start juxtaposing your images. And when you start seeing things fall into place, it's really galvanizing and it's really thrilling, actually. And I love feeding off that kind of energy.
The Ready Room.
Well, you know, time is not really linear, Char. So the monkey He's always been there, and he always will be.
I take the Janeway stance on time travel. It gives me a headache.
The Orb.
Batman also creates a contingency plan for all the other superheroes just in case something goes wrong with them. So
what does he do for the Wonder Twins, for example? Like, how is he going to take them out?
I think he just separates them internally so they can't smack their hands together.
To the journey! We have like a whole bunch of geek aliens, like they're wearing their own superhero t-shirts, they're eating Hot Pockets, they have headphones on, and they're all in their own little, you know, 24th century room, but they're like, dude, I totally just pwned the Voyager. Commentary, Trek Stars.
And underlines the goal of Prexy Gail Berman to re-energize the pipeline while revitalizing the PAR brand with top-tier talent such as Abrams. I love trains.
You have
no idea
what you're saying at this point.
Warp 5.
He can put her mind at ease about these kinds of things because he can just, you know how Trip is. Like, let's have some catfish and, like, just hang out. You know,
I was just thinking that.
Continuing mission.
We actually spoke with CBS legal team, and that was one of the things that we had told them, is that all of our visuals were all original scenes. All of our animation was going to be original. All of our music would be original. So we would not be stealing any content from the original era. Mm-hmm. And they liked that a lot.
Literary Treks.
And I just love that because it is very true. You know, Picard in some ways kind of has that Yoda-ness about him where he will kind of speak in a riddle and he wants you to figure it out.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. We have so many topics for you not only every week, but every day. We release new shows every single day. And you can get them everywhere you get your podcasts. So just search for Trek.fm or the name of the show you want to listen to, and you'll find us. Be sure to grab the master feed as well, because you can get every episode of every show we do, and sometimes some other special content that's only released in the master feed. Right there. Great way to sample other shows that you might not be listening to yet. Speaking of where you get your podcasts, Matthew, iTunes is one of the big places, and we've gotten quite a few reviews. We read a few of them recently, and we have way too many to cover here in one show, but we would like to share a few more with you today. And the first one comes from the UK, and this is from Martin Dunn. And Martin writes, "The Orb of Entertainment. DS9 is by far my favorite of the Star Trek shows, and it's great to hear it discussed in the detail it deserves by people who obviously know what they are talking about and can appreciate the finer points of a great show. I always enjoy listening to these and other Trek FM on my commute. I don't always agree 100% with everything they say, but that's why I enjoy listening, to hear different perspectives and viewpoints. Well done."
Well, Chris, I'm glad that they don't necessarily always agree with us, because I don't even think we're always right.
Right, we're not. It's all opinion. And that's part of what we try to do here on the network, is get different viewpoints. You know, I mean, oftentimes, Matthew, you and I agree probably more often than not on things, but we don't always see things the same way. But what we try to do on the Orb and Trek FM in general is to have these differing viewpoints with one another, but have them in a respectful way. So I'm glad, Martin, that you don't agree 100% with what we say and that you enjoyed listening. Also, Matthew, Mech Blakemore, 1970, left us a review in the US store, said, "Great Deep Space Nine podcast. This is a very entertaining podcast. They don't just review episodes. They get into deep discussions about the characters and themes of Deep Space Nine. I highly recommend the show." And yes, that is the whole premise of The Orb and all of our series shows here on the network, is that we're not just doing episode reviews, but we really are getting into the finer details. Also, A91R8H8 left us a review, 5 stars. "Can't live without my Trek FM. I've been listening to some of Trek FM's podcasts since early last year. I listen to them while I'm driving on my way to and from school. I find myself so engrossed in the conversation, and I wish I was there. The people who work on this podcast are real Trekkies, Trekkers too, making the conversation all that more interesting because of their extensive knowledge of Trek lore." So thank you so much for that one. And then also Tarhill-Trek left us a review, 5 stars, "What You Leave Behind. I discovered Trek FM podcasts about 6 months ago, and I have been listening religiously ever since. The various shows have quickly become my drive time entertainment of choice. During its original run, Deep Space Nine grew to become my favorite Trek, and The Orb is a chance to revisit a dear friend and reminisce. And the last one that we'll read today, Matthew, is from ETNSKVL, 5 stars. So how about those Niners? Tied for first place series, DS9 is the exception to the rule. By all accounts, it should have flopped. But the ability to tell an ongoing story was needed in Star Trek, and DS9 fit the bill perfectly. Chris and Matt are excellent hosts and expound on those things that make this a great series. This one is a must listen.
Man, Chris, those are some great reviews. Thank you so much, guys. We really appreciate it. And it really helps other people find us in iTunes. So keep bringing the reviews and we'll keep reading them out.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the key. Not only do we love hearing what you think about the show, but it does help us rise up to the top in search results and helps other Star Trek Deep Space Nine fans find the show there in the store. Well, if you would like to share your thoughts on Kai Opaka or anything else you want to ask us about Deep Space Nine, there are many ways you can do that. Go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose The Orb, and that will come to both Matthew and me by email. You can find us in social media. Our username is TrekFM on Twitter, facebook.com/TrekFM. We have a community on G+, forums at trek.fm/forums. And also you can send us a voicemail if you look in the left sidebar on the show page, or go to speakpipe.com/TrekFM. You can record it right there through your webcam microphone or your smartphone or your tablet mic and upload it to us. And we'd love to hear from you there and maybe even play your voicemails here on the show. All right, Matthew, when you're not working on your Kai Opaka cosplay for the next convention so you too can be a Kai-ette, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me doing literary treks with you where we talk about books and comics of Star Trek. So if you enjoy that realm or you just like to know more about this fascinating area of Star Trek, check us out there. And then, of course, Chris, you can find me at my own personal blog, 42lifebetween.wordpress.com. Now, Chris, when you're not sitting around trying to think up how you can become the Pope of some strange, small little country's religion, where can we find you?
Yeah, I'm going to go to wherever Doofenshmirtz is from.
Oh, okay, there you go. Yeah, you talk about them a lot, so I think you'd like to rule their world.
Yeah, you got to watch Phineas and Ferb. It's a great show. You can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones, the letter C and Brian with a Y. I'm also on Facebook, facebook.com/CBrianJones, and I have my website at cbrianjones.com. So check me out in those places. And elsewhere on the network, I do all kinds of shows, of course, Literary Treks with Matthew, also The Ready Room, Continuing Mission, Matter Stream, Hyper Channel, Warp 5, the official Star Trek Axanar podcast with Alec Peters, all sorts of things that I'm doing here. So tune into those if you want to hear more of my thoughts on the world of Star Trek. And before we let you go, we would like to tell you about our sponsor for today's show, Audible.com. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice just for trying Audible if you go to audibletrial.com/TrekFM and sign up. They have all kinds of books there, lots of Star Trek books, things from any genre you can imagine, and most new releases these days come out with an audiobook at the same time. So check them out. You're going to love Audible. I've been a customer for 14 years. I absolutely love them. And if you love podcasts, you're going to love audiobooks as well. And when you try Audible, it really helps us keep The Orb coming to you each week. So please go and try them out. Audibletrial.com/TrekFM is the URL. And we really thank Audible for their support of the show and the network.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. And we'll see you next time as we gaze into The Orb.